Welcome back to my channel. So excited to have you, Wendy Renee, here. Today we're talking to my friend Marty. Marty reached out because she, like you, wanted to tell her story of survivorship, and it is yet another inspiring tale. Before we begin, I want to thank you so much for liking, sharing, and subscribing. You can heal from narcissistic abuse and religious indoctrination. If you're new here, my name is Wendy. I was in the Jehovah's Witness organization for well over 35 years, and now I'm here just to let you know that you're going to be okay, and you're among friends, and you're with people who are also going to be okay. Feel free to comment and make sure your comments are nice, because I do read them. There is a human being on the other side of this camera. If you are looking for community, that's why we're here.
I'm so glad that you have me. I was raised a Jehovah's Witness. I had many generations of Jehovah's Witnesses. Actually, my uncles were one of the first Bethelites.
Oh, wow.
They actually worked with Franz and my mom. They sent my mom's like almost 90 years old, but they sent her at 12 years old, and that's how she became a witness here in Sacramento. Mm-hmm. And so I was basically raised in it, and I was baptized when I was 11 years old. Mm-hmm. My upbringing was very, very tumultuous. My dad was an alcoholic the whole time when I was a child. And he ended up getting disfellowshipped. Mm-hmm. Because of cigarettes. Mm-hmm. And we were the ones that had to go and, as a child, go tell on him and go to the elders and tell on him that he was actually smoking. And that was pretty traumatic.
You were a child when you did that, right? How did you know to do that? Like, how did that go down?
My mom said, hey, dad is doing something really, really bad. Smoking cigarettes. Mm-hmm. Not that he was drinking and getting drunk and passing out on the front yard. It was not that. It was, he was smoking cigarettes. So she was like, you need to go and tell the elders. He's really, really bad. And so me and my brother at that time, he's was a year and a half year older than me, no, 2 years older than me. We went and they said, have you seen your dad smoking cigarettes? And we're like, yeah. And he got disfellowshipped. And then my whole life changed pretty dramatically, because at 11, I decided I was going to go and get baptized. And I went through all the questions. And that weekend, he just went on a rampage. So fast forward it, we went to the Kingdom Hall, and we were like being disfellowshipped too, because they didn't talk to us. Our whole family was. We were in trouble too. So we always had like the black sheep for years, until my parents decided that they would move to another part of Sacramento, and that worked out well. And we were there for a while, but my dad got eventually reinstated after like 6 years. I mean, he like spent over a year trying to come back, and he did. He eventually came back, and not having the behaviors of a dry drunk, because he stopped drinking for 8 years. He went to AA, and I went with him to the meetings, and his alcoholic behaviors never changed. He was like super violent, and all my friends that were witnesses too, they were raised in the same environment. So we all thought it was normal to get, you know, whacked up the face or a belt beat from head to toe. Or just my best friend at the time, her name was Emily, and her dad was an elder, and her mom would just go off on her and beat the shit out of her. And it was okay. I'm like, it was okay. But I had this strong conviction in my heart that I needed to be the best Jehovah's Witness I could be. And I was. I was like a nun. I didn't lose my virginity until I was 30. I didn't cuss. I was as perfect as you can be. But the time went on, it took a toll on my body, my soul. And at 18, it was the last time I got hit. And it was the last time that from my father, and he ended up disassociating himself, and the elders encouraged my dad to be violent, because when I did go and I tell the elders that I was being hit, they actually told me a child needs to be beat every once in a while. Yeah. And so when that was just traumatic. Because so you don't sorry. Tell somebody that a mental illness that it's okay to beat your child, because they'll take it to the extreme.
Mm-hmm. You know, one thing you just mentioned, if I may ask, you said from that moment on, you became a super serious JW, did everything correctly. Do you think that one of the biggest reasons for that was because you saw the consequences of messing up, or you saw the consequences of deviating in what you saw your father go through? That kind of told you, I better be a good girl.
That, and I had the deep fear that Armageddon was coming.
Wow.
And that I wanted to make it, and I wanted to be different than him and my mom. And and my mom was pretty fanatic, like, and she did everything. Like, we were on assistance growing up, and if there was any kind of change, she would be the first one calling and saying, oh, we have change. You know, it just, she overcompensated. Mm-hmm. She overcompensated with totally, like, being to the extreme. But she was very, very violent too. I don't know why. I mean, I've come to find out, talking to my older cousins that are in their 70s, that their whole family was Jehovah's Witnesses, and they had this weird dynamics where the moms would do that to their kids, just scream and beat at them, and then go and be a wonderful witness at the Kingdom Hall. I don't get it.
Same. Absolutely. So I know, of all the people that I've had on this show, that seems to be a common denominator. Like, all of our parents of that generation were really into corporal punishment, but I did know of kids who weren't witnesses, who they were rare, because I was raised in dysfunction. So I thought dysfunction was completely normal, but I do wonder if it's generational, because I'm finding that the 80s, being raised in the late 70s and the 80s, we were all just kind of beat as kids because they didn't know what else to do with us.
And I was not even a bad kid. I was
Of course not. No child is a bad child. That's a label. I mean, that doesn't make
That's
any
true.
Sense, you know?
I was like, I always like did what I was told. I mean, I ended up having home study through a witness program. And because I just couldn't cope with being around the worldly kids, when they used to call, hate that name, worldly kids.
Right.
So I did home study, and I always was so down on myself. Like,
of course,
I didn't like myself. I was working at 16. Mm-hmm. I ended up becoming a regular pioneer, did that for years. Like, I can imagine what people might say about me now, because I was so good I kind of like went into hiding for a long time. Like, I disappeared. So I don't know if anybody was going to even listen to this that knew me, but they would all testify that I was super, super good. Like, as time went on, I started developing anorexia and bulimia, and I was later on diagnosed with post-traumatic stress syndrome at 18. I got victims of crime money, and most people don't realize that that's an option for therapy. It's still out there. It's a government program where if there is any kind of abuse that's happening in your family, that you can get $15,000 grant given to you for therapy. I went at 18, and they were like, that's unusual, because there was reports made about me being beat, my brother and because it had to get out. And it was not from the elders, because the elders knew. The elders were divided what they should do to me. I mean, I left the house and I was not being obedient. So, but my dad ended up disassociating himself and ended up turning on my brother. And then that's when my mom decided to leave him. That victims of crime money, I did everything to change myself. Everything to change myself. I made sure I was not drinking. I made sure that I was working on myself. I had suicidal ideations every day. So wonderful not having that now. I went and seen a therapist, and she did this therapy called Reiki on me because of the traumatic being choked so many times that I couldn't wear necklaces. I couldn't wear anything around my neck. And I did a lot of releasing of energy work. And I've later become a Reiki practitioner because of that. And I wish I could say that all that trauma is gone, but it's not. But I work through it every day. It's something that it's not going to go away. And some days I have bad days and some days I have good days, but I'm on the other side. I'm functional. I have, I have a house, a car, and I have an 18-year-old son, almost 18-year-old son got accepted to, with full scholarship to University of Davis, which is a pretty prestigious school. So I'm doing good. And I raised him by myself and I made sure that he could choose his religion. He didn't get to be around my mom very much when I first had him because I know what she's like. She is still an active witness. Everybody thinks she's the most amazing thing, but she's not. She doesn't get to see, he doesn't like her, because the first time he said to her, she had him, she was like, "I'm going to beat you if you don't sit down and be quiet." And I never been like that with my son. So I broke that pattern.
I find it amazing that your mother would threaten your child and almost expect you to not react. I would end up in jail if somebody even looked at my child funny. I would probably end up in jail. And I'm sure I'm not alone in that in the audience. And if anybody who knows me in person would say, you don't want to mess with her when it comes to her kids. But what I really appreciate about your story thus far is you're talking about how you got into the healing journey right away. And sometimes when you're dealing with generational trauma and you're dealing with not just a toxic life, but also a toxic life in the Jehovah's Witness organization, the amount of gaslighting that goes on is pretty reprehensible, especially because you did go to sources for help. You went to the elders, you tried to tell them what was going on. And yet all the while, the gaslighting was, this is the way it's supposed to be. They smile to the congregation and then you go home and you deal with something that you think is supposed to happen, but yet feels completely wrong and painful and hurtful. So all of these things is just compounded trauma put onto you. And now you have a son who's successful and you seem wildly happy. And so once you got into counseling, as I talk about often on this show, is getting into counseling is helpful. But what was your wake up moment in leaving the organization? And how did you find the courage to finally leave?
When 9/11 happened, and I noticed this is like a lot of turning point for people my age. Mm-hmm. When it happened, I was like, wait, the world is like united. Like all these people are together. And I went to the Kingdom Hall and they didn't even acknowledge that it happened. That 9/11 didn't even happen. Like,
really?
Like they were like, I'm like, what is this, like Armageddon coming? Because if this is not Armageddon, then I was like, huh. Mm-hmm. Something's wrong with this picture. I was like, you know what? And then I kept on seeing the same. I thought I was alone in the journey of the abuse. I thought I just had the most dysfunctional family. I knew I had my friends who eventually left. They couldn't maintain the abuse, and she went off, my best friend went off and got really crazy, and they black sheeped her really bad, and I felt bad for her, but I wasn't doing the same thing to her. So, it was that wasn't cool. I started having these bad panic attacks where I felt like I would go in the Kingdom Hall and just cry and just be like, why am I here? And I have a friend that is coming out of being a witness, and he is going through the exact same thing. So men are not alone.
Mm-mm. I used to call it meeting anxiety, and it was difficult. Why am I struggling going to the one place that I'm supposed to be happy? And the biggest reason why is because you cannot heal in the very place that you got sick.
Exactly. And my therapist was like asking me questions, and those questions, by asking me those questions, it got me really thinking, like, why am I here?
Right.
Why am I seeing the same thing happening? Mm-hmm. And then I was like, if Armageddon's not here by I'm 30, and my mom's already been like, thought Armageddon was going to come, then I need to go. Mm-hmm. I can't do this to myself. Like, I'm dying because I'm a virgin still, and there's no. I want a baby. I wanted a baby.
And just the way you said it, I am dying because I'm a virgin still. I mean, I get it, girl. I get it. I'm with you on that.
I didn't sign up at 11 to be a nun, right?
Right. Exactly.
That was not in the agreement here. And I'm like, I'm doing everything I'm supposed to be doing. I'm going to the meetings. I would beg the elders. I'm like, can I just sit in your Bible study? I'm like losing faith. But no, that wouldn't happen. They wouldn't do it because their wives knew I was an attractive young girl that was a virgin. Mm-hmm. And it probably was a smart thing, even though I wouldn't have cheated with anybody, but nobody wanted. I prayed. I would get on my knees and pray and ask for like guidance, and because that's what they tell you to do. And I did all those. I studied, and I'm just like, no, I don't believe anymore.
So 9/11 you started asking questions after 9/11 happened, and you weren't getting the answers.
Exactly. Like what's really going on here? Mm-hmm. But what really got me out was when I kept on seeing that there was a girl, and she was her dad. He was accused of watching porn, beating her, molesting her, and he would go and get up and give talks and would say the prayer. And they act like poop poop, like it was not happening. That what made me pissed. Mm-hmm. But that's not what really woke me up. What really woke me up was actually a few years ago, because I always thought, okay, I left and it's just the truth.
Right.
It's just the truth. Mm-hmm. And it was the Australian Royal Commission to listen to Jeffrey Jackson actually lie was that pinnacle moment. Was like, okay. Then I started looking up JW, XJW, the org, the one that I forget what it was called, and I started reading their bank statements that you can find online. And I started really like, what the hell did I do to myself? What did I get myself into? Mm-hmm. As I was smart enough to go to college and get my degree in early child education. But it just was like, why wasn't I smart enough to question what was really going on? Because in your mind, you can't fathom that what you've dedicated 30 years to is all a lie.
Well, it has nothing to do with intelligence. It has everything to do with indoctrination from childhood. Even the most intelligent people could be indoctrinated to believe something. My favorite quote by Voltaire is people who can convince you. What's the quote? I forget it now. Those who can make you believe absurdities can convince you to commit atrocities. So it has nothing to do with intelligence, but you know that. Continue.
Yeah, that's that. I just started putting things together. And then that's when I started asking my mom. And this is when she stopped talking to me, and I got the apostate mm-hmm. label, and I started asking her, did you read about the Australian Commission? And she's like, no. And I was like, go on YouTube or go to the Australian Commission website. And I sent her the website with him doing with Jeffrey Jackson's speech. It's like recorded. And they go, well, you can't believe anything that you read, that you see on it.
Right.
You can't believe anything, Marty. And that's when I got the label that I was apostate, because I was, she's took it to the extreme too, because I was in a serious car accident a year and a half ago and I almost lost my life. And I needed next to kin, because I'm not married and I'm not with anybody right now. So my son is underage. So he couldn't sign any papers or do anything. And my dad, I sure didn't want to go to him because he's crazy. mm-hmm. I needed him to, like, if I didn't make it to this car accident, I needed him to sign. And she was like, okay, I'll show up, but that's it. And then I never heard from her since. It is what it is.
It was probably the best thing that could have happened to you.
Yeah.
These abusive people leave your life, even though it was under false pretenses where you were now labeled and called an apostate. But if you notice, a lot of our abusers are no longer in our life once we leave the religion. Isn't that an interesting thought?
Right. My problem too, though, your words are so powerful. So I have attracted those kind of people in my life, but once I noticed my pattern, there I got. Like, yeah, my life has been kind of lonely, but I really now I do sound bowl healings and I do Reiki, and I try to help people and give forward as much as I can.
Well, yeah, I appreciate using conscious language, but you didn't attract them. They were drawn to you. Right. See, as an empath, we think we attract the narcissist. We think we attract toxic people. We're being ourselves. We're putting our energy out there. And narcissistic toxic people are drawn to our light because they're dark. And when you look at the organization as a toxic narcissistic person, yes, of course, they're going to be attractive. They're going to be attracted to us because we believe and we're hopeful and we're maybe a little naive, which naivety could be a beautiful thing. So of course they're attracted to you.
Your little beams of light.
You're bright. Yes, absolutely. So yeah, I'm really big on conscious language too. When I'm speaking with people, I do tend to correct them and say, well, that is you're blaming yourself there. And the littlest of terms do actually have impact on things we say. So you're doing healing bowls now. I see that you're doing a lot of cool modalities and you're paying it forward in so many ways. So why don't you tell us about that, how you have parlayed your healing into sharing with other people and where, what that's brought you.
When I said earlier on my healing journey, mm-hmm. My therapist broke the rules and she did Reiki on me and it healed me. Like I could see how much difference it made, but on the back of my mind was like, oh, I can't do that. But I could do it because we all have a unique gift of healing. And if we could come through what we've come through, mm-hmm. because I know for me, I've come through hell mm-hmm. and I'm on the other side of it.
Oh, that's like, right. Because Reiki is considered demo, like yoga, like that's, it's got this demonic undertone, according to JWs. Is that what you mean when you said you felt?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, I know.
It's just energy that you can use and that everybody needs, what they all need and what I feel like the world is trying to take away is the touch, say 6 feet apart, not, you know, that has a big thing to do with killing your energetic spirit. Mm. And me, I have helped people get that back and realize that we are our powerful beings. We're the ones that have the light and we're the one that make the choices. And I know a lot of people that have had made the choices to go and do things that are self-destructive. And not saying that I'm not anything perfect, because I mean that I'm perfect, but I've done those things and those things don't work for me. Mm-hmm. So Reiki and sound bowl healing works on different frequencies and vibrations. And when you really learn about stuff like crystals and stuff, how they all have the healing powers of, it really does work. It really does ground me. It really does help with the PTSD. It really helps with being connected. Because mm-hmm. when you have PTSD, you are out of your body. Mm-hmm. And recently I've had some difficult situations in my life, and I've been ungrounded, and I have to get back to the point where, hey, go back to the beginning, go back to what my therapists have taught me, you know, and it works. It's not going to solve everything, but it works.
And ultimately, anyone who leaves what we have left or what you have left, my therapist helped me to appreciate the fact that yes, it's PTSD, but it's mostly CPTSD, which is, it's like PTSD, but it's more of a, it's called complex PTSD is what the C stands for. So PTSD by itself is usually one and done. It could be a car accident. It could be a traumatic event. Complex PTSD is a slow burn. It's something that happens over time. And when you're going through these things, the grieving process can take longer. You can feel healed, and then all of a sudden it'll hit you in waves. And when we go through these things and you're getting the help with therapy, which is amazing, yes, you're reframing that. And I 100% believe that everything is energy. I mean, we literally are energy. And when you kept going back to the Kingdom Hall, you didn't recognize it then, because I know I didn't recognize it when I kept going back, that you're putting yourself in harm's way again. And it seems very contrary to what your energy is telling you to do, because we're taught to push down our intuition. We're taught that at all costs, we are wrong because we are human and our energy is imperfect. And that is what we're rewiring. And that is what you're doing. And that's what you're helping people do. But ultimately, we're never going to be perfect. And our trauma, it's not who we are. It's not what we are. It's part of us. And so you're one of the wonderful people who are using your trauma and using your pain for your purpose. And I think that's kind of beautiful. You know, like I hear people say, use your pain for your purpose and use your mess for your message. And I think all too often we're so caught up in perfection. Like we're going to get perfect. We're going to be perfect. We're working toward perfection was all we're told our whole life. And so every time I have a guest on here and they say, I mean, I'm not perfect. I hope not. I really hope you're not perfect, because I'm screwed, because I'm never going to be perfect. So I love that you own that and you sit in that and you help people kind of harness their imperfection.
If we listen to all those messages that we get, mm-hmm. are because we are actually empaths, and we're getting those messages for a reason. Mm-hmm. And like you said, we have to listen to our gut instinct. Mm-hmm. And if it's wrong, it's wrong. If it's good, it's good. And right. we're taught to make to not have those. And your guests on your show are all one and have been amazing. Each one of them, their story.
Everyone that we've had on our channel has just been healers and people who I dislike the term did the work, because healing is work, but it's not like ditch digging work. You know, it's I like to call it gifting yourself the opportunity to heal, because we were never allowed that, right? You're trusting in your heart is stupid. And, you know, everything was just kind of very derogatory to the human spirit. So thank you so much for joining this group of healers that we have on our channel. And I know that in our audience, there are people who are where you were, who maybe there are young teenagers who are dealing with abusive parents, and they had to sneak away to watch your show, watch your episode. What would you say to that younger version of yourself, the lost Marty, the one who just needed you now, what would you say to her?
I got goosebumps. I would tell her that listen to your gut feeling, that if you're in an abusive situation, it's not you, it's them. Because you are the light. And this next generation that we have in their 18, 19, or the next light workers, they're a different breed coming down here to teach us. They're those that are raised Jehovah's Witnesses, it's kind of like a gift because you get to see you're not exposed to all the everybody else. You're unique. And you're the one, yeah, you have to go through it, but teach yourself. This is it. Give yourself skills. There's a way out. Listen to your, go and listen to those people that have made it successful out of their life. That's what I used to do. I would go look at what Warren Buffett did and what all the people did that made themselves successful and crawled out of their hole. And they're going to be they're the next ones that are going to bring the watchtower down because they can testify to it. We are bringing it up, but they're the next ones. And there is hope. Just surround yourself with the most positive people that you can be and educate yourself. Educate yourself. If you're doubting the Jehovah's Witness, you're watching this and you're doubting what you believe, or what you've been told, go do the research. It's all there. And it doesn't have to be on jxjw.org. It doesn't have to be there. It's on the IRS website where you can go pull it up. And yeah, they're investing in porn. Yes, they're investing in the rated R movies and Hollywood and tobacco and war. And it's there. You just don't be afraid of it, because if you're waking up and you're young like that, you're hella smart.
I know. I look at this next generation. My daughter is 12 and I learn from her. I have no problem saying that, you know, I'm proud of the fact that my daughter is nothing like I was at her age. She has this beautiful sixth sense where she takes no bullshit and she can see lies a mile away. And I am so excited for where the world is going to take her and how she is not me. I'm not my mother, thank goodness. And she's not an extension of me even. She's just another human being who happens to live with me. And my job is to guide her. Let me tell you how scary it is trying to guide someone who knows more than I do. She just happens to be 12, you know, and I say things to her, listen, just because I'm a little taller than you and I've lived a little longer, it doesn't mean I'm going to get it right every time. It just doesn't. And I am teaching them it's okay to be wrong, but it's okay when you're right to sit and be right. If you're
right,
not a right fighter, you're not seeking to be right. You're seeking to be understood. And we don't have enough of that in this world. And that is specifically why I wanted you on here, because I do see your posts. You are one of the kindest, most understanding people. And, one thing I wanted to ask that we didn't cover, though, when you woke up, did you disassociate? Did you get disfellowshipped?
No, I totally just walked away.
Oh, you did? Wow.
I totally didn't submit. I'm very systematic in how I approach life. Mm-hmm. So I watch, I learn, and I looked at examples. And what I did was I just stopped going to one meeting a week. So, and then I stopped going to two meetings a week. Then I went to stop going to three. Then I got caught doing kickboxing during meeting class.
Oh no. I love
and this girl looked at me like, this is not your meeting. Where are you? Like, why are you here? But when I did finally get out, they finally noticed like 6 months later, and they come knocked on my door, and I was like pretty bad because I was dating a guy and I lost my virginity. I mean, and they were like, he was staying with me. So I was like, ugh. But I just hid. I just hid. And then when I ended up getting pregnant, I didn't get married. Of course, I'm not a big fan of marriage. But when I woke up, I just moved. I moved to Las Vegas, which was not the best thing that ever happened. But I had my son. Uh-huh. And he's like your daughter. He's amazing. He's, I don't have to hit him. I don't have to hurt him. He doesn't really talk back. Well, a little bit lately, but his dad was very, very abusive. And I got out of that situation and I've raised him by myself basically since then. And now I'm starting my new chapter in my life. And I'm really excited because I only see good things happening. I'm not scared that Armageddon might coming on this political bullshit crap mm-hmm. is happening, because it's just another change of time.
Right.
Another change of this is going to, it gets bad before it gets better. Right. And it's not Armageddon. This is just a change and us all waking up. And who knows? In 6 months, I might be doing something else. I don't know.
Right. I mean, that's kind of how we roll here as introverted empaths is we just kind of, you never know. But when you have the mindset that you're all about personal growth, especially after leaving the organization, I don't know about you, but I was consumed with personal growth when I first left. And, you know, I think it's important that we encourage our audiences to take a break from XJW content. And if you feel yourself healing, what I really appreciated about you, which what you just said, going back a little bit, is when you started leaving for a successful fade, is you did one meeting at a time and then two meetings. And I found that I did something very similar, but I wasn't aware I was doing it. I was just a busy mom with two small kids. I'm like, I'm going to miss this meeting. And then I'm going to miss that meeting. And then I noticed I started feeling better and I would get sick on a meeting day. I started having anxiety on a meeting day. And I'm like, why do I feel fine every day but a meeting day? And then I thought I was really losing it because I couldn't barely function once I pulled into the parking lot. I would have an okay day feeling fine, but then I pull in the parking lot and I'm a mess. So if you're looking to fade, if you're watching this and you're looking for a successful fade, Marty gives really great advice to just take a break. You know, if you're not ready to leave entirely, maybe one meeting or two meetings and then see how you feel. And of course, people are going to reach out to you. That's what they do. They love you. They're going to love bomb you right back. But maybe cold turkey and just saying that's it is not right for you, but maybe taking a break once in a while is. I think that that's really important for people to understand.
I have a friend who is the same age as me, mm-hmm. and he says that he goes because his family is there, and that's a big thing because he has a big family. But he's not realizing that he's having panic attacks on a regular basis when he does decide to go. Mm-hmm. And his wife was a Jehovah's Witness and she left and he wants to leave, but he's not going to lose his family. But personally, I'm not going to judge him, but I cannot consciously live a lie. I could not do it anymore. I did not believe what I was being taught. And I used to say that it was just me and that it was just like, I just didn't believe, but it was just, it's everything has its divine timing and not, don't be hard on yourself. If you went, you went.
Right. Or a lot of times people go just because they're trying to save face. They don't want to be there and they're just trying to, you know, I don't want people to ask any questions. That's okay too. So
I think it's good I never had a hobby when I was in Jehovah's Witnesses, but get a hobby.
Who has time? You're not allowed to have a hobby. Yeah, get a hobby. You know what? When I was fellowshipped, I started ballroom dancing. I became a ballroom dance instructor. It's one of my absolute favorite sports was ballroom dancing. I still love dancing to this day. Salsa and rumba are my absolute favorite dances. And I remember when I was disfellowshipped, my mother told me I was ready to compete and I listened to her and I never did get to compete, But she told me while I was this fellowship that Jehovah was still watching me and that doing salsa meant that I was using my body to be alluring.
Oh my God.
So even when I was this fellowshipped and I still believed it, finding a hobby was next to impossible. I wasn't allowed to write because I've mentioned before that writing allowed room for Satan to hear my innermost thoughts. So I couldn't write. So if you're watching this and you have a hobby and you're still on the fence about fading or leaving, Marty is absolutely right. Get a hobby and don't let anybody tell you otherwise, because it's fine. If you're not hurting anyone, there's nothing wrong with hobbies. But the Watchtower organization does mention hobbies. They mention wholesome hobbies. But it's this weird cultural indoctrination that you can have hobbies, but not too much. You can go to the gym, but you can't go to the gym because you don't want people to judge you. You can't be too good looking. You can't be too fit. Because you can't be too fit because obviously you're not giving time to the ministry. You're going to have a hobby, but not a good hobby. Your hobby better be the ministry. That's where I was weird. Field service was my hobby. I know. It's sad.
Mine too. I was like doing it 90 hours a month.
Wow. Yeah. I remember the 90.
I had 90 hours a month and I fitted. I don't know how I did it. I burnt myself out.
Of course.
I was working 7 hours a day. Going to school part-time, almost full-time, and 90 hours a month. I kind of cheated, though, on the hours. I would, try to be, count the witnessing time and write my reports at the same time.
We all did that. Come on.
One thing I do recommend, and my therapist recommended, there was a book, and it helped me a lot to reason. It was called, a lady. Her name was Louise Hay. And she wrote this book, You Can Heal Yourself or Heal Your Life. Mm-hmm. It's on actually on YouTube for free if you want to listen to the book. But it makes a lot of sense in our thoughts. She talks about thought patterns and how to change them. And it was a very healing book overcoming bulimia and anorexia wasn't easy. And it has the root causes and what you need to say. And I would stare at the mirror and looking at the mirror and loving myself was the hardest thing. I do love myself now.
I love that. You know, one of my favorite points too, in my personal growth was I learned a lot about neuroplasticity. You know, sometimes, you know, you hear fixed mindset is I am what I am. This is how I am. It is what it is. But then you get into growth mindset and growth mindset is like, well, this is how I am right now. Right. But I know that I could learn better, do better, do more. And when the brain has this amazing ability to rewire itself, but the only way the brain can rewire itself is with new experiences and new information. So sure, we were going one way in the organization, no matter your age, we were going this one way. And then you have a new experience or new information and it kind of diverts a little bit. And that's how the brain has this beautiful plastic way to rewire itself. So thank you so much, Marty, for encouraging us to be to continue to be on the healing journey, and that CPTSD and trauma, even though it never leaves you, it's part of you and that's okay. It's still reframed and that's okay too. And look what you do. You use it to help other people. So thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you. And I really love how I've seen a lot of people, in this journey. And I really feel like you have the gift of drawing this out and you have good advice. That's why I volunteered. I've never done this before and I've never came out before.
Oh, I'm honored. Especially since you're not DF'd or disassociated. This is a really big deal for you. And I hope you in the audience, we do not take that lightly, not one iota lightly. I don't know if I have a gift. I just genuinely love people. I don't want people to feel lost. And I remember waking up, I was looking for something and I didn't know what it was. And I feel like I'm always looking for that one thing. And I don't know in this lifetime or any other lifetimes if I'm ever going to feel like
you found it. You're doing it.
Yeah.
You're doing it. Well, you're doing it.
Hopefully, you know, and it's interesting because I do talk to a lot of people. I have no problem admitting that. I mean, I'm very open with my thoughts and my life, but I have found that one of the most difficult things when people leave the organization is finding a life purpose. Because in the organization, you're taught that this is your life purpose. Like it's drilled into your head and you're gonna save lives, right? So we have this savior complex while we're in the organization. Like I'm doing this great thing. And then when you leave the organization, you're like, now what? What's my purpose? What's my job? What do I do? Everything else was supporting my life purpose. Everything else was in the way of getting to that purpose. And so if you're watching this and you're struggling with your identity or your life purpose, you are among your people because we're all trying to figure that out. Don't think that just because I have a YouTube channel that I know what I'm doing. I'm right alongside you thinking, I don't know either, man, but hey.
Think about those words though. YouTube channel, it's a channel.
Yeah.
It's a channel to heal.
Oh, I like that. Yeah. All right. I'm going to work on that, Marty. Thank you very much. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for watching the channel and listening on the podcast. Reach out to Marty. All of her contact information is in the description box. That's all we have for today, and we'll see you next time.